ready to roll. Okay, so there was a point to showing those videos besides them just being ridiculously funny. Okay, so 2 points to note. When people are scared, or I guess there's 3 points. When people are scared, they have a fight mentality, which I guess if you're throwing a pillow at somebody, that may count as fight. Most people go to flight mode, which is run. As you can see, man, that time where that dude was like, no, 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 and then threw it at him, that for me was one of the best. And then I don't know what the other one is, fight, flight, and something else. It's all going to be aight. I don't know. There's a third one there. But when people are afraid, that they typically respond in a certain way. So as you can see by the top of your handout, tonight our topic is fear not. And we're going to be addressing some fears tonight, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's not how you think it is, but in order to address how you think it is, we're going to address some common fears. So I'll just share with you 10 of the most common fears. Justin will throw a picture up for you, and we'll just start walking through. The first picture is of an old lady, and one of the most common fears is agoraphobia, which is a fear of public places. We went through Ecclesiastes and said eventually we're all going to get older, which means we're going to fear the outside more. So there's that one. Another common one is arachnophobia, also a really cool horror movie. But did you know that they discovered a new tarantula-like spider that's the size of your face? Whoa. Okay, so there you go. There's, I think it's kinophobia for canines, but people are afraid of dogs. So there's that one. There's blood injection injury phobia, which is people who are afraid of getting stuck with needles because they're afraid that they're going to get some kind of disease with it. There's acrophobia, which is a fear of heights, which if you're scared of heights and look at that picture, you may go, huh. Okay, there's aerophobia, which is a fear of flying. There's a falling phobia, that they don't really have a name for that, but falling is a phobia. And anytime you get ready to fall, everyone is scared of falling. And the proof is when you stumble and you're about to fall, your first reaction is, ha, 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 right? Because you do not want to fall. And the worst place to fall is walking upstairs. Because if you fall walking up the steps, that's way worse than falling down. When you fall down, people go, aw. When you fall up, people just laugh. Okay, there's a social phobia, right, that maybe you get nervous giving public speeches and having to talk out loud. Sierra overcame hers today by leading through the game. So, hey-o. Okay. There's claustrophobia, which I think you may or may not be claustrophobic, but if you're buried alive, everyone's claustrophobic, including Jake Gyllenhaal, all right? And then there's hydrophobia, which is travel, that if you're scared of going to foreign places and foreign locations, that you can be scared of that, all right? So Justin will throw those top 10 up again. Here's just the list. Those are just 10 common fears that people have. And so the question would be, if you're afraid of something, what are you afraid of? Mine is snakes. I don't jack with snakes. And one of the reasons was I used to mow yards that were, you know, up to your waist. And typically if a yard goes that long, that there's snakes living in that mess. And so one time I was mowing and this snake like ducked the mower and then came out underneath it and started biting at my jeans. So I backed up over that thing. And then at another time I was climbing up a little cliff and a piece of rock ledge broke off and there were literally a couple hundred snakes on the inside spawning, and so then they started falling out of the rock. So I had both a fear of snakes and a fear of falling that I just let go, and ha ha ha. And then there's that, and that a lot of that started with USA a little while ago before they were just replaying old shows. They used to make basically home movies that they would put on their network. One of them was called Rattlesnake. And the story of Rattlesnake was that these snakes got charged with aggression and started attacking this small town. And then they would come out of toilets. They would come out of bathtubs. I mean, I remember there was a dude who sat down to go to the bathroom, and he got struck by a rattlesnake, died going to the bathroom. That then one of the stories was the rattlesnakes abducted a kid and hid him in a cave, and this guy had to go rescue the children. And so he went into the cave. All the rattlesnakes were asleep, but don't you know it, as soon as he grabbed the kid and walked out, they all woke up and started striking him in the legs. And so he was carrying the kid out, like doing this. And then so I went to sleep that night and had one of the worst nightmares I've ever had in my entire life. And from that moment, I've been terrified of snakes. So some people play games like, oh, it'll be funny, man. Let's find a snake and let's throw it at Justin. Let's see how he reacts. That's not funny because I'm going to punch the snake. I'm going to kill that snake. And I'm going to come after you. I'm going to kill you. All right. So that's me. I don't know what you're scared of, but everybody has fears. And so we'll just throw this question up. Why do you fear? Why fear? Why is that in your soul? And there's just all of the other W questions that we're going to walk through. Okay. So Who do you fear would be one of the questions that we would have. And so who do you fear is that question. And so when we look at it, when you say, do you fear a person? Now, I'm not talking about Freddy Krueger. All right, he's terrifying because he can find you in your dreams. That's different than Jason, man. You can kill Jason. He's real life. But Freddy Krueger will mess with you in your dreams. All right, that's terrifying. But I'm not talking about that sense of terror. But who are you afraid? And when we say we fear a person, it typically looks some things like this, that you fear a person when that person holds a place in your life that God is supposed to have. So someone other than God who takes God's position in your life could be a person you fear. Now, you may need that person to praise you. You may respond very negatively if they criticize you. And so we put that person in a position of fear because we treat them like a functional God. That what that person says to us very much directs how we live. So that could be a parent, that could be a grandparent, aunt, uncle, teachers, but somebody has the ability to drastically shape your life by what they say and do to you. That, in essence, is being controlled or mastered by someone. And so that can come out as physical control, emotional control, spiritual control, and controlling your spiritual well-being. That could be a person you fear because of how they assert control on your life. As a teenager, that's called peer pressure. As an adult, we deal with the same thing, and that's just called people-pleasing. And it's also, you can call it codependence, that when your life is hinged upon a person and you need that person to walk that out, that's a person you fear. So some questions we would ask to help you frame who do you fear. One would be, whose opinion matters way too much to you? That there's opinions that I care about, right? So if Tyler or Andrew or Justin or Nick say something to me, I care about what they have to say. When it comes to hip-hop, I care what Romy has to say about me because he's actually put out tapes and I haven't yet. I've only been on a couple, right? So when Say Something says something to me, right? But if I start to value, man, if Romy's like, man, Justin, I don't like you, and then my world is crushed, all right, that clearly Romy's holding way too much value. Is your appetite for praise unhealthy would be a second question. Now, I'll tell you, the majority of you are on the internet for that reason, because you want to hear what's being said about you, right? You want to hear the things that people are talking about, right? And even if you're on Twitter right now, one of the really popular things amongst teenagers is subtweeting, right? That you can totally bash somebody and everybody knows who you're bashing, but you're not going to put that person. But when that person knows you're bashing them, you can be like, that's right. But you, right? Copy tweet URL. But when you start to frame the necessity of how are people saying things about me online, right? That when you fall in love with people saying you're so awesome and then you fall apart if people say you're terrible, is your appetite for praise unhealthy? The third one would be, are you overly devastated by criticism? So if somebody says, hey, here's a place where I think you can grow or here's a place where I think you could work, do you just fall apart at that? Rick Warren, who's a pastor in California, he says, criticism today is instant, constant, global, and permanent. So instant in that, you can put anything, anywhere, right now, right? That you may be criticizing me right now, and you could put that on the internet, instant. It's constant in that it's just a revolving stream. So if you feel like you're being criticized, the internet can make it that there's not a way for you to get away from that. It's global in that everything you put on Facebook and Twitter is both being stored in the Library of Congress and is also being able to go around the entire world, and that it's permanent and that those mediums specifically are going to stick around forever. And so are you overly devastated by criticism, and are you committed to things and people that God did not call you to? That would be one way to frame who do you fear when you're committed to things that you don't feel like you're on the planet for, right? So some of you are in sports and clubs and hobbies and other things because someone in your life tells you you have to. And if you were to say you didn't want to do that or you wanted to drop out of that or you wanted to stop, that you knew that criticism of you would just be devastating to you. Or you find such praise in doing something you hate that you're just glad to get praise, right? And when it comes to attention, we're either going to get positive attention, that's going to be enough for us, or we'll go out and get attention by getting it negatively, right? And so how does that frame who you are? The second question would be, what do you fear? And again, I'm not talking about like snakes or heights, but what do you fear? And so is there something that the thought of it happening just incites fear in you, right? That if this what were to happen in your life, you are automatically terrified. Now, that is both finding a pit of snakes and falling into it, Indiana Jones style. Right? But that's also, there's some more common things in life besides pits of snakes. Do the people you fear influence the fears that might happen? So is failure something that you're afraid of? That's a what. Is loneliness something you fear? That's a what. Ridicule, is that something you fear? That there's a lot of what's like that that you could fear. And so some of the questions for what do you fear that could start to get that happen in your brain. What, if it were to happen to you, is worse than you would ever imagine? That if that what happened, that would be one of the worst things that ever happened to you. That would be a what you fear. The second would be, what could you not stand the thought of happening? Right? So even the idea of that thing happening, you get angry at the thought of that being a part of your life, right? That for some of us, like for me, my family grew up very poor, right? That we were in the army, so my dad never had a ton of money. And Rachel and I joke about it right now, but man, macaroni and cheese and hot dogs, we were living the high life, right? If you went macaroni and cheese and smoked sausage, you might as well call that five-course meal. That was there. I mean, I ate so much shake and bake that the thought of shake and bake for me right now is I'm like, I don't want it, right? So if Rachel goes, hey, I'm thinking about shake and bake, don't you dare pull out that plastic bag, and don't you think about opening those crumbles and pouring them in, and don't you do this, right? That for me, that I could say honestly that it would be a fear for me to get to that place, right? And so some of you have that. Like, I never want to be like that in my parents, right? I never want to be like that in my mom and dad, that would be a what you fear. What do you never want to be associated with? That would be a what you fear. That for people to put you in that category, you would say, no, like, no. If I were to be in that camp, I don't want it. Where do you fear is another question. And so where do you fear? That would be a place in your life that either is coming or has come, and that the thought of it brings you to fear. So a where fear would be, maybe there was something, a specific location in life that something happened to you, and that every time you're near or think about that location, it reignites that event, right? And so I've been a part of some very traumatic, terrible events in life, and there's certain places that I get to that will cause that event for me to recall it, that'll just come back to my brain. Right? And so that location, that where for me, if I'm not careful, could start to frame a fear, right? That if you've been in hospitals a lot and your family's been sick a lot, that anytime you get into a hospital, it just reignites terrible fears, right? That your mom could say she has a cough and you think that it's cancer because you've just walked through the number of sicknesses that have been a part of your family. And that's a where that could be framing a fear. So why does that event continue to hold power on your life if it's a past event? Why does that single event continue to hold that power? And I would bet that it stems from a fear. Do the circumstances that caused that event still happen to be a part of your life? So maybe you did something really awful, right? But the things that caused that awful thing to happen, you've still got a part of who you are, right? That the only difference is you haven't just done awful again. And that where fear could start to frame that. The third one would be, is the possible person who was there still a part of your life? That maybe that where is because of a person. Maybe it's a parent that did something terrible to you, a mom or a dad, an aunt or an uncle, a grandparent, a neighbor, that person may still be a part of your life, and that where fear still kind of holds over you. And then when would be the last one that we ask, when being another fear, and then when do you fear would be the coming question. So that would be a time in your life, either past or present, that you do not have the ability to think about. Right? So for some of my friends, one of those when fears would be the idea of getting married. The when fear would be the idea of having babies. The when fear may be going to college. The when fear may be moving out of your parents' house and having to survive on your own. That could be something that frames it. There's past events that bring you back to seasons of life that terrify you. Again, medical, relational, those sort of things. The future events that are coming, graduation, college, graduating from college, so that those future events may be framing it. So here's some when questions to even frame when do you fear. Is there a time in your past that continues to influence you? So something that happened in your past that you continue to be defined by. One of mine that when I was growing up was when my parents got divorced, and it seemed like everywhere I went, I was defined by my parents being divorced because my dad didn't live with my mom anymore. And so there was always a fear that when people found out that I was divorced, especially in church life, that I would be treated like a second-class citizen because both of my parents didn't live at home. And so there was a lot of times where I didn't want to talk about my parents' relationship because I knew that would influence people's perspective of me, and that was a fear. Is there a future time in life that terrifies you, and do you have an unhealthy dread of that time, right? So it's very natural to be nervous about moving out because you got to pay your bills. It's a completely different thing that if you get paralyzed by the thought of moving out from your mom and dad. Like the idea of doing your own laundry, cooking your own meals, having to get a job and pay bills, you just get paralyzed with fear. That would be a when fear. And what is informing your perception of what that time is going to be like? So what's causing you to think that when is going to be like that? For most of my friends who are afraid of marriage, they see a lot of terrible marriages. And they're afraid that if they get married, that they're going to be another one of those couples that gets divorced, that'll probably have an impact on their kids, that they just see married people are poor and unhappy, and they don't want to be poor and unhappy. That evolves into the baby life, that friends of mine who have a fear of having babies typically are afraid of having babies because babies cost money, babies cause you to sleep less, and then babies cause you to not have friends, right? That, so they go, oh, the thought of having a baby, I will ruin my life, right? So what's informing that perception? And in marriage and in parenting, I'm like, I bet you see a terrible marriage and you see terrible parents, and that's what informs it. But if you see good and healthy ones, you probably won't be so afraid. So we'll throw up those four again, and again asking the question, why do you fear? So why are you afraid of that thing? Why does that thing control your life and guide your life? You can define fear as simply, fear is vision without hope. Fear is you thinking this is going to be this way, and you have no hope on that situation. If I move out, I'm always going to be poor. I'm always going to be broke. My laundry's always going to be dirty. I'll never have my bed made. I'm never going to have a home-cooked meal. Right? You have fear there. Fear is not always rational, but it is always powerful. Okay, so here's a very irrational fear. You could throw a garter snake at me, and I'm probably going to put that thing on the level of a coral snake, right? Because my mind is, it's probably the deadliest snake in the world that you captured with your hands and you're throwing at me now. And that one bite of that I'm only going to have a couple minutes to survive. So when that snake gets thrown at me, I don't care if it's 2 feet, my irrational reaction is, ha-da-da-ha-da. Right? That is powerful, but it's absolutely irrational, right? It's irrational for me to walk out on that grass out there and think every step I take is a snake hole and that they're going to come out and rattlesnake me and I'm about to carry some small children back to his mom or dad, right? That is very irrational, but it's powerful. So I'm not saying that your fears are stupid. I'm saying that they do have a very powerful effect. Fear preaches a false gospel. Gospel just being truth. Fear preaches a false gospel. It presents a false hell of what the terrible things that are going to come your way. It presents a false heaven as to what is your security and what is your hope in that situation. And it gives you a false savior because you think the solution to that fear is some kind of counseling, some kind of treatment. Maybe it's lying in a bed of snakes and that'll cause you to overcome it. But that false hell, false heaven, false savior is where you get fear is going to tell you some things that are not true. And fear causes people to be false prophets, right? Prophesying a future that has not happened yet. So when you have a deep-seated fear about something, you look ahead and you think you know what's going to happen. Like you know exactly how it's going to play out because you're afraid and if you have babies, it's going to, and you're afraid and if you graduate, it's going to, and so you think you know exactly how the future is going to be because fear to you will be a false prophet prophesying a false future. And so here's God's response, right? It's going to be really crazy. God's response to fear is fear not, for I am with you. So we've got a bottom line on the bottom of your handout. And if you get nothing else from tonight, it's going to be really easy. Fear not, Jesus is with me. Fear not, Jesus is with me. There are days where we'll kind of walk through things topically and we'll address certain situations. And specifically as it relates to fear not, we are going to deal very topically with it. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a lot of stories from the Bible and I'm going to tell you kind of the content of that story. And then I'm going to read you the scripture that relates to that story. And here's what I need your help on. Anytime you see fear not on the screen, when I read through it, I need you to say it out loud with me. All right? So you're going to want to warm up your pipes. Right? And you're going to want to get some real force behind it. All right? So I don't need fear not. Right? I need all caps, fear not. All right? I need to feel it. Terrify me with your fear not. Okay? So this is sucker-free Wednesday. Meaning everybody's got to be in it, all right? There's no room for suckers. So just say fear not out loud with me, if even to keep yourself from boredom, okay? So the first what fear we would address is while Abraham was still childless and in need of an heir, God came to him in Genesis 15 and said this, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. I think you can do better. I like how you're warming up, though. The what would be when Hagar had conceded to let her son die in the wilderness, God came to Hagar and said, and God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said, what troubles you, Hagar? For God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. You're getting better. The where, when Isaac could find nowhere to live without fighting, Genesis 26, 24 says, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the Lord of Abraham, your father.
Fear not.
For I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake. There was a wind. Israel was standing at the shores of the Red Sea and the Egyptian army was coming behind them. Exodus 14, 13 says, and Moses said to the people, stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. There was a who moment when Israel received the report of the land of Canaan, and it said that they felt as grasshoppers when they saw the inhabitants. Numbers 14, 7 and 9 says, and he said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. And that should say, fear not, but do not fear the people. Just say, and the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. There's a wind. Moses is going to die, and his young successor, Joshua, is going to take over. Deuteronomy 31:6 says, be strong and courageous, or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. 31:8 says, this is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Or be dismayed. Now, here's the deal. Some of you are starting to calm down as if we're not on the fifth book of the Bible. Or fourth? Fifth. All right, so I'm playing. All right, so you act like we don't have a long way to go. All right, here's a what. Joshua being in charge after Moses is dead, Joshua 1:9 says, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, and be not dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Gideon was called by God, lying in a pit, and he saw an angel face to face. Judges 6:23 says, but the Lord said to him, peace be to you, you shall not die. Elisha and his young servant were surrounded and being sieged by the Syrian army. 2 Kings 6:16 says, he said, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Solomon was charged by his father to build the temple. The temple was only one of the seven wonders of the world. Big deal. 1 Chronicles 22:13 says, then you will prosper if you are careful to observe the statutes and the rules that the Lord commanded Moses for Israel. Be strong and courageous. Do not be dismayed. Jehoshaphat was the king of Israel. The Moabites, the Ammonites, the Moabites came to battle against him. 2 Chronicles 20:15 says, and he said, listen, all Judah inhabitants of Jerusalem and the king Jehoshaphat, thus says the Lord to you, and do not be dismayed, Trevor, read the screen at this great horde, for the battle is not yours, but God's. 2 Chronicles 20:17, it says, you will not need to fight this battle. Stand firm, hold your position, see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf, O Judah and Jerusalem, and do not be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them, and the Lord will be with you. That night, the armies destroyed themselves. Cool story. That there's a hymn in the city of Zion. Psalm 46, 1 to 3 says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at the swelling, Selah, which is the Bible's way of dropping the mic and walking away. There's a what? Isaiah had a song about the coming Assyrian invasion. Isaiah 12, 2 says, behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and for the Lord God is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. After Israel got invaded, Isaiah said this, say to those who have an anxious heart, be strong. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, with the recompense of God. He will come and save you. Okay, now we're about halfway. All right, so put some more air in the tires. Get some. All right, so following Israel's invasion again by a different army, Isaiah said in 49, go up to a high mountain, O Zion, herald of good news. Lift up your voice with strength, O Jerusalem, herald of good news. Lift it up, says to the city of Judah, behold your God. Israel, feeling that God had left them because they had suffered and had been invaded twice, Isaiah 41:10 says, for I am with you, be not dismayed, for I am your God, I will strengthen you, I will help you, I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. 13 and 14 says, for I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand, it is I who say to you, for I am with you. You worm Jacob, which God is encouraging, right? You worm, right? Little girls laugh at worms, right? Like when you pull one of the earthworms out of the ground, like six-year-old girls will be like, ha ha, because worms are defenseless. God just looked at Jacob and said, fear not, you defenseless little worm. You men of Israel, I am the one who helps you, declares the Lord. Your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. There's another what? Israel, realizing that only God is going to be able to save them, in Isaiah 43:1 says, "But now, thus says the Lord, He who created you, O Jacob, He who formed you, O Israel, for I have redeemed you, I have called you by name, you are mine." Isaiah 43:5 says, "For I am with you, I will bring you offspring from the east, and from the west I will gather you." Israel, in the midst of all of this, there is a coming restoration. Isaiah 51:7 says, "Listen to me, you who know righteousness, the people whose heart is in my law, the reproach of man, nor be dismayed at their revelings." God's eternal covenant with Israel, saying, "I'm going to restore you, I'm going to keep you, I got you." Isaiah 54:4 says, "For you will not be ashamed, be not confounded, for you will not be disgraced, for you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood, you will remember no more." Israel is in exile, all right? They've been kicked out of their homeland, and they're now bearing the weight of a ruthless king called Nebuchadnezzar. Jeremiah 30:10 says, "Then, O Jacob, my servant, declares the Lord, nor be dismayed, O Israel, for behold, I will save you from far away and your offspring from the land of your captivity. Jacob shall return and have quiet and ease, and none shall make him afraid." There's a who. They're there. There is a coming invasion by the nation of Babylon. Jeremiah 42:11 says, "The king of Babylon, of whom you are afraid, declares the Lord, for I am with you to save you and deliver you from his hand." Israel is surrounded by the superior Babylon, Thebes, and Egyptian armies. Jeremiah 46:27-28 says, "But, O Jacob, my servant, be not dismayed, O Israel, for behold, I will save you from far away and your offspring from the land of their captivity. Jacob shall return and have quiet and eat." Oh my gosh! Okay, and none shall make him afraid. "Oh, Jacob, my servant, declares the Lord, for I am with you. I will make a full end of all the nations to which I have driven you. But of you, I will not make a full end. I will discipline you in just measure. And I'll by no means leave you unpunished." Encouraging. There's a when. Jeremiah, after all of this, right? Jeremiah's been in captivity. He's then been led into another captivity. He writes a song called Lamentations, which is a long series of depressing songs. Here's what he says in Lamentations 3. 57. "You came near when I called on you. You said,
fear not."
Nice, I like it. Joel prophesies to post-conquest Israel, and in Joel 2, 21 and 22 says,
fear not.
"O land, be glad and rejoice, for the Lord has done great things.
Fear not.
You beasts of the field, for the pastures of the wilderness are green. The tree bears its fruit. The fig tree and vine give their yields." There is Israel's coming restoration in Zephaniah 3:16. We're not even to the New Testament yet, folks. "On that day, it shall be said to Jerusalem, O Zion, let not your hands grow weak." The first exiles returning from captivity. And Haggai 2:5 says, "According to the covenant that I made with you when you came out of Egypt, my spirit remains in your midst." There is coming peace and prosperity that it says in Zechariah 8:13. "And as you have been a byword of cursing among the nations, O house of Judah and house of Israel, so will I save you, and you shall be a blessing." Sammy, you didn't say that. Congrats on your scholarship, though. But let your hands be strong. Zechariah 8:15. "So again, have I purposed in these days to bring good to Jerusalem and to the house of Judah." Okay, that's Old Testament. Oh, we ain't done yet. All right, so you need to revive your lungs again. Okay, so the heavens are open and angels are singing around the throne, and you see them. Luke 2:10 says, "And the angel said to them, for behold, I bring you good news of great joys that will be for all the people. You hear that you have a daughter and that your daughter has died." Jesus would respond like this, Luke 8:50, "But Jesus, on hearing them, answered him, only believe and she will be well." Those who have the power to take your life, maybe you're concerned about people who could kill you. Here's what Jesus would say. Luke 12:7, "Why, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. You are of more value than many sparrows." Maybe you're concerned about food, clothing, eating, your life. Luke 12:32 says, "Little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." Paul begins preaching after he was ridiculed and mocked in the previous city. Acts 18:9 says, "And the Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, but go on speaking, do not be silent." Paul was at sea in the midst of a storm for many days. He had no rest, had no food. Acts 27:24 said, and he said, Paul, you must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. John, upon seeing the resurrected Christ seated on the throne, he's got a sword coming out of his mouth, and the brightness of the sun is in each of his eyes. Revelation 1:17 says, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead, but he laid his right hand on me, saying,
fear not!
I am with you, the first and the last. So we started and said that the bottom line is fear not, for Jesus is with me. So I ask you the question, why do you fear? Because situationally, we walk through just about every situation, the what, when, where, all, who, we walk through all of that. And here's my guarantee to you, every one of the situations in the scriptures is of significantly more worser than yours is. It's much more badder than where you're at, right? Because where they're living, right, that the who that they would fear are conquering armies coming to kill them and their children. Odds are, conquering armies are not coming to kill you and your children. The where that they would fear would be being led off into captivity to be slaves of a foreign king and whom is going to be ruthless to them. And yet they are not to fear. The times in which they would fear would be of approaching armies and of approaching pestilence and of approaching problems, and yet they're not to fear. And so when you see the scriptures, one of the most repeated commands is fear not. Why? Because Jesus is with me. And if Jesus is with you, it's going to be all right. So worst case scenario in life, you die. That is the worst case scenario, right? For those who love Jesus, is it that bad of a deal? Because you get to go be with Jesus sooner rather than later. You get to be to no pain, no heartache, no sorrow, no tears, no suffering. You get to be there earlier. And hear me, I love the planet. I love life. I love good food. I love good friends. I love my good wife. I love my good kids. I love good music. I love life. But if I get to go be with Jesus sooner, that's not that bad of a deal. So worst case, I die. That's all right. And so Jesus says, man, don't be afraid of those who could take your life. Fear not, for all they can do is take your life. And if you let that settle in your soul, why are you afraid? Because the scriptures would say to you, fear not, be not dismayed. I am with you. I am present with you. You could be in the worst situation of your life right now. Fear not. You could be in the darkest days of your soul. Fear not. You could be in the worst season of suffering and sorrow you've ever had. Fear not. So why are you afraid, right? So Tyler and Caleb are going to come up here and get ready to rip some worship for us. And so here's just in response what I feel like is for all of us. The first would be to repent and believe in the gospel. If you don't have Jesus, you should be very much afraid, because the only reason you've got to fear not is because you have Jesus. So if you don't have Jesus, fear, because you don't got Jesus. But if you have Jesus, fear not. So if you don't have Jesus, step one, repent and believe, and then welcome to fear not. For some of you, it's a fear of someone. It's a fear of something. It's a fear of somewhere. It's a fear of some time. You've got a fear for all of us. Fear not, for Jesus is with us. And so here's kind of my hope in tonight, right, that over the last couple weeks, we've really guided you to a public response, a corporate response. Come up here. Leader's going to move in. Leader's going to pray with you. My hope in tonight is that we're not going to do that, but that for us, very symbolic of the front, is us just letting some fears go, right? That there's not anything crazy about the front of the room except that the stage is like 2.5, 3 feet tall. That's a little bit awkward. Tyler stands at like 9 feet 5, you know, when he's up there. That could be a little bit daunting for some of you. But for the front, there ain't nothing special, but for our heart to say, man, God, I'm dropping this fear, and I'm letting this fear go, and I'm putting this fear down, and I'm letting that thing die. Fear not, for Jesus is with me. And so I'm going to give you kind of one scenario that I'll tell you kind of the fear of that kind of came over my life. Okay, so I alluded to it a little earlier, but my parents got divorced when I was 15. And in walking through divorce, right, I'm a young man. And so 15 is one of those crucial ages. At that time, you know, freshman year, sophomore year of high school was when people were piranhas. It's since move younger, and so like 6th and 7th grade is probably the most like hostile time of life right now. And so in that age, man, that there was a time where all of these things that I was growing up into as a young man, I didn't have a man to shadow me through that, So if you ask me to fix a car right now, I don't got that. If you ask me to fix things around the house, I don't have that. I learned how to tie a tie by going on the internet and watching videos about how to tie ties. I learned how to dress up by reading magazines about how to dress up because I just didn't have someone teach me that. Right? So one of my fears about life was in relationship to my dad, in relationship to my mom, and in relationship to family. Right? And there was just a fear and what, how is all this going to work? What's going to go on from here? How's this going to go? And I meant so plainly, and you've been around for a long time. There's a moment where I came home after my parents said that they were getting divorced, and the things that Jesus said to me was, "Fear not, I'm with you." And that's the only thing he said. Fear not, I'm with you. Fear not, I'm with you. Fear not, I'm with you. And relentlessly said, "Fear not, I'm with you." And that's again all he said. He didn't make my parents' divorce get better. He didn't cause my parents to come back together. He didn't amend the situation. But he said, "You have no reason to fear, for I'm with you." And then you can fast forward a little bit forward. I met this beautiful young woman. She was blonde, funny, hecka attractive. And so then there came this moment of fear of, I don't know how to model being a husband and a dad. And there's fear about being one. Because what if I don't do a good job? And that fear got quickly ignited when I was sitting around with some close people in her life, and they were kind of in the place where they were questioning me and examining me to see whether I'm worthy to be with Rachel or not. And one of the things that they said to me at that time, they said, "Well, we're a little bit concerned because your parents got divorced, and we're just concerned that you'll think divorce is easier because you've been the child of a divorce." And I can tell you, I didn't fear it before. But man, in that moment, it's like it came back all over again. And I just, I mean, as so quickly as it came back, I felt like Jesus just suppressed that in it and said, "Fear not, for I'm with you, man." And I can look confidently in your eyes and say, "I've been the recipient of a divorce, and I see how much that sucks. And my guarantee is I am not going to be the one who lets that go. Because I'm not going to do to my wife or my kids what was done to me and my mom." I was like, "So you can have worries all you want to, but look at the suns in my eyes. Fear this, because they ain't getting a divorce. Fear not," right? And I got up and I stormed out and I flipped a table. I'm just kidding. It didn't go like that. So I know in your soul that there's something that you're deeply afraid of, a fear that guides how you live. And what I'd say is tonight's one of the best nights for you to just lay that at the feet of Jesus and to hear him say to you, "Fear not." All right, so if you want to stand to your feet tonight, Tyler and company are going to lead us in some tracks. And as we've done over the last couple weeks, I want to pray some scriptures over you. And so we're just going to kind of walk through that who, what, where, when, why, how. All right, and so we're going to use Isaiah 41 as a template by which we're going to walk through praying some scriptures. All right, and here's what I'd say. As you start to feel that fear, if there's a when fear, a why fear, a who fear, if you start to feel it, then I would say come up to the front and just hear the words of Jesus. Say, "Fear not," all right? So let's all bow our heads together, and I'm just going to start to pray over you. And as you feel it, right, as you start to feel that, even the fears start to rise up, then I would encourage you to get out of your seat and come to the front, and let's throw through some of this thing.